Hello, Sumit. How are you today?
Very well, Colin. How are you?
Yeah, really well, really well. Welcome to the Chief Executive Top Floor podcast series. I'm really, really excited to be talking to you. But just to help the audience, can you tell us a little bit about what you do, what the business does?
Sure. So, Annan Foods is a catering and hospitality firm. We deal in two sectors in the business to business sector, working predominantly within aviation and the rail sector. And also, we have recently launched a retail section of our business, a B2C section, which focuses on promoting our fusion foods into the retail market.
Wow, that's a lot. You're really busy, I should think.
It's a lot, and I think that's kind of been the trend here for the last year or so. The company's undertaken quite a lot of change, not just within the infrastructure, but also in the direction the business wants to go in as well. But yeah, no, we're well geared towards it at the moment and ready for the challenges ahead.
Yeah. So from what I gather, you do quite a lot of fairly antisocial sort of hours in your trade, in your particular contracts.
Which caterer doesn't is what I say when people say that, to be honest with you. Look, hospitality and catering is one of those kind of industries where, if you're not in the industry, it seems like a pretty standard 9-to-5 sort of industry. But in reality, it's all the stuff around the 9-to-5 that we have to do. So it's usually very early starts and pretty late finishes. Weekends are weekdays. I always say normally the weekdays are somewhere near the weekend. So yes, it's a lot of hours, but also a very niche industry in the sense it's very specialist in what it is. And there's a lot of jargon, a lot of red tape, and a lot of sort of precise direction that you have to follow within the business as well. So it's definitely something where if someone is looking for a challenge or a change in career, we see a lot of people enter hospitality with that in mind, I think.
Oh, that's really interesting. Wow. How did you get into this?
I came out of university at the age of 21. I spent a couple of years doing a few odd jobs. My dad used to run a takeaway shop, not too far actually from where we're based now, here in West London, Southall. And he wanted to be away with the business and wanted to sort of, call it a day. He'd worked, 20, 30 years in this country, having been a migrant back in the 80s. And he just basically had enough of it. So me and my brother, who was a year younger than me at the time, and also my business partner, he graduated a year after me at university as well. And we came out and we said to our dad, look, we'd very much like to continue this line of business. But our thinking at that point was we'd continue with the shop concept and look to add more stores and shops as we go along. But it grew into, us putting our money together and our savings over the years to buy a initial catering unit in Southall, and that's where the business started from. But from what we thought it would be then to what it is now, and the things that we're trying to do and are doing in some aspects as well, is very different now.
Go on. And did you plan for that change?
You can never. I mean, you can plan as much as you want, but nothing ever goes to plan. Is one of the things, but I'm a very honest person in the sense I always say, look, although we're a catering hospitality company, my individual strength is not within the catering sector. So I'm not a chef, I'm not someone who has vast knowledge on foods, but I'm a strategist and somebody who has always had a passion for logistics and business development over the years. So it was something that kind of fell in place over the years, whereas my business partner has always been very much into catering, into aspects of food, into the actual, the fusion element of food. And something that's grown, especially since 2012, I'd say, in this country, has been the sort of fusion food styles. And that's where I think we kind of things fell into place for us as a business, and that partnership's worked out really well.
Yeah, fantastic. And you've got huge contracts in airports and all sorts of places, which you might not have expected, I don't suppose, when you took over your dad's shop.
No, not at all. I don't think any of what we do today was not probably on the radar, or 90% was not on the radar when we started. Airports was definitely not something we'd ever considered. So it was something that just came about through an opportunity. We started off as a subcontractor for a company providing some basic level contingency catering services. And that contract grew over the years. So the more we've grown our thinking, the more that we've developed ourselves as individuals, the more we've been able to put back into the business. And now we work with the three of the biggest London airports, which is London Heathrow, London Stansted and London Gatwick as well. And the business is really starting to pay dividend now after some hard work.
Well, I think you're understating that. It must have been an enormous amount of hard work. I mean, looking around you, you've seen quite a lot of aspects of catering, from the shop right through to this sort of contingency catering you're talking about. What do you think, what are the big issues facing your sector, you know, in 2024?
To be honest, I look back and I think it's the same sort of problems that we were initially having in 2012. So there was a big change in 2012 around the way food was priced. And also a lot of change at that time, having, I think, just come out of a recession, or I think we were just at the tail end of it at that point, the substantial changes in prices. So I think now in 2012, I think especially sort of post-COVID, we've seen enormous changes in the way supply chains work, pricing strategies we've had to implement to keep the business afloat at one stage during COVID, but also come out the other end and not feel guilty for charging the prices we do today, because the astronomical changes around sort of food supply, etc., it's really a costly element of hospitality, is the sourcing of food. And I think additional compliance, such as sort of having red tractor assured providers to make sure it's all ethically sourced, these things cost money, and they're fantastic, and I totally agree we should all be going down that line, and we all have a responsibility to our planet. But some of the things that we have to sometimes explain to some of our clients is that we follow these guidelines to make sure that we're providing the best quality that there is in the market, but also we want to know and be assured in ourselves that we're following the correct guidelines. So when you're doing that, it unfortunately comes at a cost.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing facing our industry at the moment, us particularly as a business, because we're at a very pivotal point at the moment where we're going through some big growth. But the more you grow, the more responsible you need to be as a business as well, not just to your people, but also to your clients and to your auditors and everybody else that comes around it. So with that comes the price tag. And I think now sometimes I think back to the kid in me that used to go to, you know, stores and couldn't, you know, I'd be moaning, you know, how can they charge this much for, you know, a cheeseburger? But now I know why that
is. Now you've got the inside track, you know exactly where it's all going.
And it's always say it's not just the food that's the cost, it's the elements and the costs around it which lead up to a product being priced at a certain price tag. So yes, similar industry and challenges, amplified a little bit more by things such as COVID, like we just touched on. But yeah, definitely, I think within our sector at the moment, supply chains are something you need to really be on top of.
Yeah, so tracking the provenance of the food is even more important than it was in 2012. And as you say, more expensive to manage.
Absolutely. And I think especially we struggle to guarantee prices to customers now going forward and hold pricing, which we probably were very good at doing pre-COVID. Yeah. But having said that, it's not just our industry that struggles or has challenges around that. There's a lot of industries now that can't hold pricing or can't sort of promise a certain structure towards pricing going forward. But, you know, you play with the cards you're dealt with at the end of the day, and that's what we're sort of doing at the moment.
Yes, that must demand quite a lot of flexibility from you. Yeah, that's quite difficult. So with that in the background, what do you want to achieve? Where do you want to be in 5 years' time?
5 years.
It's a long time, I know.
It's a long time. But then, I mean, having said that, I like to look at the other way around. You know, where were we 5 years ago as a business, back in 2019, probably just before COVID. So I look at that, and it was just complete chaos in the business because we were growing as a team. We were getting contracts, but there was no structure to our business at that point. I look at it 5 years since then. I look at how structured we are becoming now as a business, and we've got specific people that look after specific roles within our company. So for me, in 5 years' time, I'd like to, you know, solidify those positions further. And I always say, as a business owner, your base has to be strong before you do anything else. And I think we're at that process where we are now understanding that more and more about our business and getting to a point where, you know, growth is important, but we want to do it the right way and make sure that we have a very strong foundation from where we work off. And we don't want to be sidetracked by any of the social media hype that we see out there, and sort of, you know, companies that are selling dreams, I always say to people. So always promise what you can deliver on as a business. And I think we just want to continue doing that for the next 5 years.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. So how do you bring the team with you on that vision? You've got quite a lot of people, I should think, working for you at all sorts of different grades and serving the food, etc. How do you bring them with you?
So, yeah, I mean, we employ, I think, just over 30 people now in total. We've taken 5 or 6 on this year, which has been probably the most we've taken on in one go at any sort of stage. So I always say a workforce feeds off the leaders around it. I think irrespective of what sort of personalities you have, everybody feeds off positive energy. And one of the things we've always been very good at is leading by example as owners. I always, you know, whenever I have a chat, you know, I make it a point to have a chat with everybody in the company at some stage in the week. And one of the things that's always been passed on from a very early stage is the directors have always done every single aspect that there is to this business. We're not directors who've come in and you know, gone into owning a company or running the management side of it. We've also been the drivers at some stage. We've been the warehouse workers at some stage. We've worked in kitchens. I've been kept out of the kitchen because I don't have that much knowledge. But I've swept the floor before, for example. So, you know, and I think that holds a lot of respect within your workforce when people feel like they can come to you with any problem because they know you've
been those
problems
you've
solved, yeah, and you've solved those problems. And we encourage that quite openly. You know, we don't have a shut door policy. It's very open door. Anyone can come in and have a chat. And a lot of people like to do that from time to time. So we have that very family feel to our business, which is something we don't want to lose. And of course, the bigger you get, you start to lose elements of that. But one of our core values is built around just kind of, you know, making sure everybody's treated with respect, and everyone should be approachable within the business. And I think that works really well for us at the moment.
Yeah, and I hear that a lot, and I love it. And in fact, to be honest, I've said it myself many times. I used to drive my vans, and you know, I knew the logistics inside out and every single job. But how does that play out when you're trying to grow your business in terms of your time management? Because if you're the person everyone comes to because they trust you because you've done it, are you able to separate yourself out from the operation?
Yeah, so this is something I think Colin, I think I have to give you credit for that at this point, because I think you were the first.
Thank you.
Probably the first one to sort of point this out to me. But no, definitely. I think when you've grown a business from its core, I think it's always very difficult to let go of certain aspects because you feel like you're always going to be the best at those aspects. But I think slowly letting go of certain things has shown me that other people have great leadership skills within our company and can step up, and they present solutions in a different way which might not necessarily be my cup of tea, but they work for the business. So it's about just separating that away from it. And also, I think generally with my role, it's quite unpredictable. There's times I'm in the office, there's times I'm not. So even if they want to walk in and have a chat, they have to find me first in the building is what I say, which yeah. helps. Which helps.
Make yourself difficult to find. That's a very good way of delegating, I think. Fantastic.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was looking at your website and you've obviously got some really strong core values in there, two of which are service and excellence. Just given what you're telling me about, you know, food prices and, you know, the challenges of just keeping going in this sector, how do you maintain those two core values in such a competitive sector?
I think service has been a core value of ours even before we knew it was a core value.
Service and excellence. Those are the two I picked up on. Yeah.
Yeah. So for us, the two go hand in hand. I mean, we've always felt a client needs to have maximum value for what they're paid for. And sometimes I think our standards are so high when we ourselves become a consumer in the same market and we pay some of the prices we do to purchase food or to purchase a service, we're normally quite underwhelmed in the sense that we think, well, you know, this is not how Anan Foods would do it, for example. And that isn't snobbery or to think that, you know, we're a bigger brand than X, Y, and Z. I think it's more just the standards we've set ourselves, what we see as acceptable, we feel as a company is far beyond what any of our competitors see as being acceptable. So the two have always gone hand in hand. And one of the biggest things that we constantly get from clients is there's always a wow factor to what we do. So if we're going to provide a service, you're going to get more than what you expected as part of that service, whether that's a friendly team, somebody staying in touch, whether that's the actual product. And it's really brought us to realize how great of a product we have. Over the last year or so, in fact, definitely has kind of really shone through for us. You know, we've got a great product here. We've got a great service team here. And the more we add to our team, the more we distill these values within people as well. And I think we're at a stage, you know, we're not a Costa, we're not a McDonald's, you know, we're not a world-renowned brand just yet. But I think the main thing is always just yet. You know, we're not at a point where we think we can't be there. But it definitely isn't a case of losing those values. I think we always want to hold those two in some of the highest regard. And I'd like to think that most of our clients, if not all of them, have the same feeling that we always go above and beyond for them.
Brilliant. And the other one is... one of your other standards is the standard of the food. You just sort of referenced that just then. But that seems really difficult in a modern supply chain. How on earth do you keep up with, you know, making sure this stuff is locally provided, issues what you want, or Red Tractor? How do you manage to keep this quality up and know that the supply chain is delivering for you?
So I think one of the things we've had to put in place, the more we've grown with sort of contracts within aviation, et cetera, I always say, look, cost is it's a massive element of any business, but the cost of doing business with the right partners, you know, it's priceless. You know, you need to have the right supply chain in place, et cetera. So we work with suppliers that we audit regularly as well. We look at, you know, site visits, etc., and see where the food is being sourced from. We consistently gather data actually around their compliance. And I think it goes back to one of the things we said right at the beginning of this podcast was you pay a little bit more for that, but it carries you in a far greater strength going forward because, you know, you've done your due diligence as well along the way and you know you've got the right partners on board with you. Of course partners change over the years and you know you've got to be in the market consistently, but I think the standard of service within hospitality is so high at the moment within the UK in particular, I can't be sure globally, that as a company, if you want to grow your business and you want it to be, you know, a renowned brand going forward, then you 100% have to go through the right partners and the right supply chain.
Yeah, you can't do this stuff on your own, can you? You've got to align yourself with good quality partners right through the supply chain model. Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic advice. So going forward on this dream, it sounds like the dream is to be a worldwide, world-recognized brand. What are the biggest issues you're currently dealing with in order to get there?
So we're at what I call the growing pain stage of a business. We're trying to make that step from a small, medium enterprise into a large business. And I think it's a classic example of not really knowing what it entails until you get right amongst it. So for us, it's again now about getting the infrastructure in place to make that change, but also educating ourselves as directors, and our management team within the business as well, to take them on the journey with us. So it's a really exciting stage, 100%, but obviously challenges around rebranding, which we've recently conducted within the business, has been a challenge, because it was about, you know, what is our identity as a company, and the people that work within the company, what is our tone of voice, what does our website look like now, what does our packaging look like now, especially we've entered retail at Stansted and other airports. So what do all these things look like? And, you know, when you think of it initially, it doesn't seem like a massive challenge, but the more you kind of get into it, the more you realize there's so many layers that have to be peeled off to get to the actual destination. So definitely one of the challenges, recruitment, it's a global challenge at the moment, I feel.
Yeah.
And of course, we're an industry where it's specialist individuals we require and skilled workers that have the adequate knowledge as well to come in, chefs, packers, those who have food compliance backgrounds. So it's quite a challenge, and it's quite a niche with, you know, the economical challenges around us at the moment as well. So yeah, those seem to be our biggest challenges at the moment, but definitely something I think that we're excelling in. We're educating ourselves more and more in, and I'm pretty sure we'll come out at the right end of the scale with that.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a real positive attitude to the rebranding, and I think that's going to hold you in huge good stead going forwards. And of course, yeah, you're right. Everyone's got problems recruiting the right people at the moment and keeping them. That's just an eternal challenge. I think it's going to be quite a long-term one for a while at least.
Yeah.
So with all this and taking on the business from your dad, what, 10, 12 years ago, what's been your big learnings?
Big learnings have been, I think the biggest thing that I learned at the very beginning was that, you know, this is not a business that is 9 to 5. And my biggest thinking, I think, probably having entered the corporate world at a pretty young age initially, having been schooled through the educational systems, you know, my thinking was a 9 to 5. But I think I realized very quickly in this business, and especially the sectors that we're operating in, it's 24 hours. So, of course, I don't function 24 hours within the business, but just understanding that, you know, you are always going to be that focal point where if something is in desperate need, then you may well have to step up and do X and Y and pivot around things. So I've found that to be the biggest challenge. Having two little kids as well is
yeah. You
know, I mean, come out of COVID, and you know, I've got a son who's 3 and a half and a daughter who's 1.5 years. So trying to make sure I'm consistently present and I have the time with them as well as run a business and try and maintain some sort of element of social life as well. And I think it's all come to a point where it's taken a step now into growth aspects of business as well. So it's about juggling all that time, and then still trying to find time for your own fitness amongst that. And
getting that balance, all those things right. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's just a constant revolving door. But
so it sounds like the big thing you've learned then over this 12 years is how to adapt.
I think I'm still learning, to be honest with you. I've learned to adapt to different aspects, but it's also taught me a lot about myself, in the sense that I think if you want something bad enough, you'll find a way to do it.
Yes.
And I think it's something to remember, because sometimes we can get guilty. And, you know, I think things like, you know, I stopped going to the gym at one point for about 6 or 7 months. And then I came to the realization that if I wanted to do it bad enough, I'd find a way or a means to fit in the hour in the day somewhere.
Yes.
And I think sometimes we get guilty as business owners or directors or management within business, where we get so wrapped up in what we're doing that we start to neglect other aspects of life, which are equally important. I've experienced that myself quite recently, where I felt really overwhelmed with everything that was going on around me. But I think I've taken away from that I need to prioritize some time for myself, because, you know, a well-oiled machine is only as good as its maintenance as well. So
I think that's got to be the golden advice to anybody. That's absolutely fantastic. So you kind of almost answered the next question, really, because I was going to ask you, just to wrap up here, what two or three things would you advise an aspiring business person in your sector to focus on?
I think focus on serving before you lead. It's the biggest factor. You know, people will respect you not for what you've achieved, but for what you can show them you're capable of as well. And I think it is about earning that respect of, you know, not just higher management or the respect of your friends or your family. You've also got to earn the respect of your workforce as well. So that doesn't come, in my opinion — everyone has a different strategy and different viewpoints on it — for me, it doesn't come from, you know, dictating to people or showing your position of power. I think it comes from showing that, you know, you're there to serve, and you're there to serve a purpose within the business. And I think people will come to respect that. And the more you serve, I think, as a person, I think the stronger of a leader you will be as well. And I found that, because there's no aspect of my business that I do not know how to get stuck into. So I sometimes can see things within my business that others may well feel clouded by. And I think that works really well, because you work off your management and your leaders within your business as well. And I think it's a really good mix. So focus on that. And the last thing I would say is, you know, material things are not important. And I think I've learned that over the years. It seems to be the trend these days that, you know, people want to live a very social media lifestyle or an influencer lifestyle, and that's all well and good, but I think that still comes with a lot of hard work in the background. And I've learned over the years that the things that I materialistically wanted, when I actually came to the point that I could afford them, I no longer wanted them, because my vision had gone beyond making money. So it wasn't any longer about material things or about earning X amount of millions a year or etc. It became a wider purpose. It became about, you know, what I believed in as a company, what I wanted for my company, which was way beyond just money and wealth. And I think once you start chasing that side of things and actually trying to grow and find your why as to why you're doing what you're doing, the rest will come with it. But I think the more you chase money and the more you chase materials, I think the further away you will always be from these things. Because there's no end to these kind of things. But
yeah.
I think stick to what your plan is as a person. Be humble, and I think treat people well, and they'll respect you for that.
Wow. I think that is just the most fantastic note to end this podcast on, Sumit. Thank you very much indeed. I really appreciate your time, and I really enjoyed this interview. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having us, Colin.
No worries.